Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Interesting show lineup for you, courtesy of a one Beth Moothart, who's rolling her eyes at me. Thank you very much, Beth. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. We have Liz Skinner on the line with us, investment news reporter at Crane Communications. Liz comes to us as a financial journalist writing about what makes the top financial advisory firms tick, which is good. I'd like to know that. I'm going to pay attention to that. She's got a BA in political communications from the George Washington University and a master's in environmental resource policy from the same college. Investment news reporter with Crane Communications for 4 years, freelance editor, writer, 8 years, Bloomberg, another 4 years. So she is what we call a veteran of the journalism and journalist business. And we're excited to have her come and talk with us because we've got some topics that have hit the news here recently that just struck a nerve with us. And Beth said, let's get Liz back. I said, absolutely. So welcome back, Liz.
Thanks very much, David.
I'm glad to have you. And listen, great writing. Let's just dive right in here. Liz wrote an article. You call it article column? What do you call it?
I mostly write articles. Okay. I write a few kind of opinion pieces.
All right.
But these are all articles.
Articles are more just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. All right.
Exactly.
Excellent. No colored columns, okay? Nothing. We need to know the facts here. So, okay, so Liz wrote about a really important issue, and you know what? It is so obvious that everybody misses it, and we don't think about it despite how much attention we put on some of these things you're going to be talking about. So I'm really, really glad you're bringing this to people's attention. And the subject is the legal issues for kids when they head to college. And that is what every parent hopes someday is not only that they leave, but they go to college. And I have three lined up, Liz, so I found your writing and the exploration of these topics very relevant to my own personal situation. So let's dive in here. Some of the things that we don't even think about, and I work with this kind of stuff all the time, is when they turn 18, it all changes.
Well, it does. And legally, so they are considered an adult. And yet, of course, most of us don't really give up responsibility for our kids as soon as they turn 18. So then once they are 18 and then now going off to college and where they aren't going to be physically with us, there are some legal documents that will, frankly, make life much easier if the parent has attained before the child goes off to college. And it
Excellent.
Can also kind of bring up some interesting conversations that your adult children and you probably time to have.
Yeah, you've got to forget the diaper days and realize you've got an adult sitting in front of you or standing in front of you saying, I got to go meet my friends. And again, not to belabor the point, Liz, but, you know, I deal with the people telling people, you need a power of attorney, you need a healthcare surrogate, you need a living will, you need all these things. And here, let me send you to some attorneys that'll do a good job for you. And didn't even think about the kids, the young adults turning 18. So they're off at college and there's something that comes up maybe with their credit card or with a bill or something that somebody needs to help them with, and you can't do it because they are their own person.
Well, exactly. And that's why power of attorney is one of the most important things that a parent or a guardian should get for the student while they are away at school. Because being able to sign documents on their behalf while they are away and being able to have access to some of their financial accounts, which, you know, you may need to be transferring funds here and there. If you have to call your child and get them to, you know, sign some form in a different city, it can really be inconvenient.
Well,
so that's really the biggest issue with the power of attorney.
Not just a convenience. Sometimes time is of the essence, right?
Certainly.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking when my son especially, he's going to be 14 soon, and I think I'll get him to do that when he turns 18. We'll make it an irrevocable power of attorney and maybe even put some teeth in it. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, it's so relevant to the importance of planning for them. And now the next one, of course, is, you know, these are young adults who are very active and they do get hurt or things do happen. So you don't automatically get to make healthcare decisions for them anymore either, right?
Well, exactly. Once they are 18, the parents should really talk with their kids about getting a healthcare proxy, which is what would allow the parent to make a healthcare decision for that child if they are incapable of doing it themselves. And if this type of form is not signed, they, you know, the parents might show up, you know, at the school or at the hospital in this case.
Right.
And if the child is unconscious, the parents won't be able to make the decisions that need to be made regarding that child.
Well, you know, I'm sure people are saying, oh my gosh, that can't be, Liz, you know, that can't be. And maybe, you know, maybe an irate enough mother could convince a doctor or nurse to follow their instructions. But you know what? I think your writing here and recommendation is, you know, 1,000% correct. Why even take that chance of having to talk somebody into something, have the documents in place, because you just have to be able to, you know, you have to be able to make those choices for them. And then, of course, the next one is horrible to think about. We're not even going to talk about it, Liz. It's the living will. It's so bad. But if somebody's faced with a situation where their child is gone from whatever, maybe injury or accident or illness, but their body still works, that, you know, there can be a, you know, pull the plug.
Well, exactly. And this is where I mentioned it can really lead to an interesting discussion with your child to see how they feel about what type of life-extending medical treatment they would want to receive.
As well as
you can ask them and talk with them about donating their organs.
Good point.
And again, some of the advisors that I spoke with said it really led to an interesting discussion about values and about helping people. And although it's a gloomy topic to be talking about with your, you know, fresh 18-year-old going off
right.
to school,
right.
it can be a valuable discussion.
Well, I think you're spot on, Liz. I think that I would echo that thought and comment, and I would say that, you know, it's a good time to really have that kind of big girl, big boy conversation. And also, I know you mentioned the idea, although they may not have accumulated a lot in terms of assets, it certainly makes them think about, you know, about assets and why they're important and how you leave money to other people if you're not here anymore. And even the idea of a basic will.
Well, exactly. In addition to this living will that we talked about, some families especially should think about whether or not their adult children have a will themselves. So, you know, many wealthy families have spent years and years creating a gifting strategy and passing wealth down through the generations. However, if, you know, an 18-year-old dies, that child's assets will go back up to the parent.
Mm.
Unless there is something in writing, perhaps, to send it to a sibling or that kind of thing. Otherwise, when it comes back up to the parents, then some of the estate tax and other type issues will be in play.
Good point, Liz. And you know, not to play an attorney, and I know you're not playing one either, Liz, but my understanding is the reason why it goes back up to mom and dad is in many states, it's right there in state statute that without a will, if somebody dies intestate, it goes in that order up to parents, and then it goes, you know, in different directions depending on the state, but automatically back to family if someone dies without the will in place.
Well, exactly, and you know, nobody really thinks about, you know, an 18-year-old going off to college and not coming back.
Yeah.
But in fact, there are kind of different things that they could put in the will to talk about, even where they want some of their belongings
sure.
to go.
Good point.
I know one of the professionals I spoke with said, you know, that was really what his son was most interested
right.
in with regards to all these decisions was he wanted to leave his fishing rod to his brother.
Yeah, so, I was thinking, you know, who gets my room?
Exactly.
All right, good stuff, Liz. Liz Skinner, ladies and gentlemen, investment news reporter at Crane Communications, where you can go check out all of Liz's great work and writing over at investmentnews.com. We'll grab a quick break, and we'll come back with Liz and have another topic for you. Stay right there.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialists, and certified annuity specialists. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and individualized attention to each and every one of our clients. Count on Holland Financial for your financial advice, not only for today, but for many years to come. Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com.
Oh yeah, we're back. Liz Skinner on the line with us. Glad to be with you, ladies and gentlemen. Investmentnews.com is the website. You can go check out Liz's work over there, and she got another great article she wrote that caught our attention as well. Help clients kick kids out of the house without feeling guilty. You know, when I was a kid, my mom loved kicking me out of the house, but it was to, you know, go play in the yard because I was a bit hyper and I needed to go burn some energy off, Liz. But now we're really talking about a different world where a lot of quote-unquote kids have these young adults that we're getting health care and power of attorneys for are coming back home to live, and they want to live there. They don't want to leave.
Well,
what,
exactly.
What to do?
And we're seeing the numbers of young adults living in their parents' home increase. Since 2007, it was about 22% then, and now we're up to 26%, and that's not a lot of years for to see a giant national trend like that.
Wow. So right off the bat, what would you, you know, what do you say to some parents who are struggling with this, that they, you know, they don't want to have to do that. They feel guilty, or maybe guilt's wrong. Maybe that's one emotion, of course, but maybe it's just simply they feel sorry for the child. Or, you know, in my case, the first emotion I would have would be afraid for them, worried about them, wanting to protect them. And so how do we address that?
Well, and certainly having your adult child move back in, perhaps after college or some other situation, it temporarily can be kind of a nice bonding experience where, you know, you're more on equal footing and have a different type of relationship. However, what we're hearing about is more and more as time goes on, the amounts that people are then spending on their adult children goes way beyond just providing that roof over their head and, you know, the extra that they have to spend on utilities and even groceries.
Oh, yeah.
They're covering bills like their cell phone bills,
right,
and their car insurance and their health insurance and other bills that really add up and can start to have an impact on the parents' own ability to retire.
Those are all outstanding points, Liz, and I share anecdotes about my personal situation because it seems like just the other day I moved back after having worked. I went to work right out of college for an accounting firm, and then I had an opportunity to come back to where I was from and go to work for another company. And when I did that, I didn't know what I was going to do in terms of living, so I stayed with my parents for a while, kind of convenient. And again, like you talked about, that different little bit of a relationship, but first thing I got was a suggestion that I help contribute toward the grocery bill because I was making a big difference in that bill. So, yeah, it's stuff that people don't think about, but it's important.
Well, and that's one of the things that can be done when an adult child moves home like that. Certain parameters about, you know, contributing both in terms of maybe some money, but also maybe contributing some time, some chores kinds of things. And you don't want to treat them like a young child, but it's, you know, part of an adult relationship to contribute.
Yeah, and what about space? You know, are there considerations about saying, look, here's, you know, there's some space issues here. You know, you can be here for a while, but look, it's crowded with you here. I mean, any thoughts about how to handle just the more people in the house, and it just maybe they've already made adjustments, the parents have already made adjustments to the home, or maybe they've even moved into a smaller home after they thought they weren't coming back?
Well, sure. And you would think that perhaps if they did move into a smaller home and there really isn't enough room for the young adult, that might encourage a faster turnaround time.
Yeah, we're selling the house. You're going to have to leave.
Exactly.
See, that's not going to be a problem for me because I have a boy and two girls, Liz, and I've already got the two. There's two of them. I've got two Rapunzel towers built, so they're not going anywhere. They're going to be good. They don't have to leave. No, I'm kidding. I want them to be independent women and do their thing. But yeah, these are all important things to think about when they go and they come back, even if it's temporary, just to get kind of situated before you take the next step in life. And it's a lot of good things for people to be thinking about. Any other thoughts on this particular issue?
Well, I know one of the reasons that many of the adult children are spending more time in their parents' home is because they have racked up giant student loan bills.
Yeah.
And so that's something that parents especially often want to help with.
Sure. And so, not having to rent, they can put that money toward, if mom and dad aren't charging them rent, that money can all go 100% toward knocking down that debt. And maybe that can be part of the deal.
Exactly. So that's the kind of thing that seems like a reasonable kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it gets out of hand when then the parents are actually paying those student loan payments as well for the child who's living in their home rent-free.
Yeah. Good point, Liz. Just joining us, Liz Skinner on the line, investment news reporter over at Crane Communications, investmentnews.com. is the website. Grab another quick break. We'll be right back with Liz. Stay right there.
When it comes to finding a financial advisor you can trust, do you know the right questions to ask? David Holland has written a popular book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy. Or if you want to meet one-on-one with David to talk about your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book with no cost, no obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. Or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we're back. Liz Skinner on the line, returning guests. And you know they're good when they come back, and you see why we invited Liz back. Thank you, Liz, for coming back. Hey, before we leave the subject of kicking the kids out, I kind of touched on it, then moved past it, and we got into some of the nuts and bolts. What do you say to parents who have all of these emotions about kicking the kids out, the guilt and the stress and the worry and all these things? Are there any suggestions you have, or in doing the research for this particular article, that you would suggest have been ways that people have coped and dealt with that?
Well, it's important that parents sit down and really talk with their kids about maybe some of the things that they are facing with regard to finances and such. And it's also important that a parent really understand that taking care of yourself financially is an important part of becoming an independent person.
Good point. Very good. Yeah, and you know what? If that becomes not enough, I know this, people may resist this a little bit, but if somebody feels that way, Liz, and they're dealing with all these emotions, then by all means, seek some counseling. And I've had people tell me that, that I've worked with as clients that they dealt with some emotional aspects of either the child leaving the house and going to college or coming back, and some of this kind of these different transitions that they went and got sought counseling, and it really helped. So there's certainly many ways to approach these challenges.
Well, that's certainly something some type of a counselor could definitely kind of work with the parents to make sure they aren't feeling guilty about asking their adult child to contribute and do some things that can help ease the strain that they put on by being back at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good. All right, and I've saved the best. Well, it's right up there with these other ones, but it's so important for people to think about this next topic, Liz, and I'm really glad you wrote about it. Also in investment news, how advisors can help clients arm themselves against data theft. So I'm all ears, because I want to help our clients, Liz, make sure they do the very best they can. And so what are some of the things that we need to be looking at? What do I look at? What are some suggestions you have for people in protecting their data and really looking out for their identity and you know, protecting that asset which they've built up over time, this asset which is their identity that means things and has value? How do they go about protecting it?
Well, it seems like every week we're hearing about more and more breaches of data, whether it's from Target or more recently the IRS has said that some information got away from it. It's really important that when a client or when someone receives a letter from a group that says, you know, your data may have been hacked, they actually need to verify and make sure that it's a legitimate letter. That as soon as, in talking to some people who are experts at this, they said as soon as there is an actual breach of, say, a company's data, the scamsters come out and start reaching out to people and say, oh, you know, you may have been a victim. You know, give us some information so we can verify and let you know. So they may send out an email and they'll build a fake website. So the first thing to do is make sure that however you're being told that there has been a breach, make sure it's legitimate.
Good point. So good, Liz. Yeah, there are so many different ways that, that the scammers can work. And, you know, if you've got, especially on the credit cards, you know, because obviously that's, it's so commonplace now that we hear about this breach, that breach. And, you know, if you, you have concerns, you know, turn your credit card over and call. You know, I've gotten calls to my house, Liz. You may find this amusing. I've gotten a call or two from my house and, you know, they want it. They say, oh, you have this problem with your credit card and, you know, we need to do this, we need to do that, verify you still got it. You know, let me read some numbers off my card, or I want your social and all this stuff. And I'm like, you know what? No problem. Let me call you right back and hang up and then call the credit card company. And the credit card says, no problems, no issues, you're good. Nope, it was a scam. And so you just can't be too careful no matter what it is to be on guard. Because you're right. As soon as there's any rumblings, they come out of the woodwork like cockroaches.
Well, exactly. And you should never be responding to a phone call or an email that asks you for information. You should do what you did. Either, you know, hang up the phone and call the number that is on the back of your card, or if you're online, go to the company's website and look up the basic customer service number, and you proactively reach out and ask if there's been some type of a problem or breach.
Oh, and outstanding, Liz. And the other thing you made me think of is if you get an email, you mentioned the email. You get an email and there's a place to click in the email to go to the website. Delete the email. Go to your own browser. Go verify that it is the correct email by other correspondents you've had with your company, because you said before that they do create these fake websites. So, you know, just make sure you've got the right address. Type it in yourself, go into your account or pick up the phone, call the number. And, you know, it's funny with websites. It doesn't cost much. You know, I get things all the time, Liz, and I'm sure you too. We could build you a website for 10 bucks. Well, guess what? Scammers can get websites built for 10 bucks too.
Exactly.
It's crazy stuff. All right, so how about the other aspect of this, which is that not all breaches are the same. Speak to us a little bit, Liz, about some of the different types. Are there, you know, is there ways to kind of break them into different categories?
Well, in speaking to some of the professionals that deal with this, they mentioned that a theft, kind of like what happened with Target, where it was those thieves stole payment card information. So the data that was stolen had a limited effect. It causes people trouble, and people have to freeze those accounts and have to, you know, close those accounts. But it mostly ends there. It gets much more complicated when there has been a breach, like at the IRS, where they have access to Social Security numbers and other types of personally identifying information. And when all of that is compromised, then thieves can actually open new lines of credit and commit other types of identity theft by using the information that they've gleaned.
It's crazy, Liz. Okay, so I just thought of, you know how people make fun of the IRS, they call it different things. Well, I just thought of a new use of the IRS acronym, Identity Release System, our Identity Release Service. We're here to serve you. We're going to release your identity. You can't call us and get accurate, reliable information about, we can't give you advice over the phone. And now we're going to release your records or not secure them sufficiently. Yeah, it's a little crazy. Now, here's the interesting, Liz, you're right on target with, no pun intended, about the difference between Target, credit card being stolen versus your identity. You can go get a new credit card, you can cancel your credit card, but you can't go get a new identity. You can't write Social Security and say, hey, I'd like to trade my number in for a new one.
Well, exactly. And in some of the other stories that I've written on this topic, it can take people years to clean up some of these messes.
Yeah.
And it's my understanding it leads to very frustrating phone calls with regards to the credit agencies and trying to clean up a problem when your identity has been stolen.
Crazy stuff. Well, so how about some final tips here, Liz? What about the credit agencies and freezing your credit? What about that?
Well, if someone is really concerned, then having your credit frozen is really kind of the most robust thing that an individual can do to protect themselves from identity theft. Now, in order to do this, you have to reach out to the three different credit rating agencies, and they essentially lock up all information about your credit.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, if you were to then go try to buy a car and get a car loan, you would not be able to do that because nobody could check and see what type of credit you had. So then, if you do want to do this, every time you have some type of a transaction where you are going to need to either open up a new credit card or, as I mentioned, take out a loan, you're going to have to thaw it, which
Excellent.
Involves calling each of the credit rating agencies.
A lot of work.
And paying a fee.
Yeah.
Every time that you thaw it and then refreeze it, you have to pay a fee to each of the agencies each time.
Well,
so
it's a lot.
Really, yes,
it's a
bit of a convenience and expense, but it is a very secure way to make sure no one is opening any accounts or taking out any loans in your name.
Good stuff, Liz. We'll have to leave it there. Liz Skinner, investment news reporter at Crane Communications, investmentnews.com. Liz, thank you so much for coming back to us.
Thank you, David. Take care.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.